In all of the shops, landmarks, and environmental marvels of Chihuahua, Mexico, there is one local tourist attraction that stands out among the crowd. A small boutique bridal shop. It's just like any bridal shop, really. It stocks endless gowns of lace, tulle, and sequins, bridal shoes, veils, tiaras, and jewelry. But it's not the opulent ivory dresses dripping with gems and elaborate embroidery that people flock to the shop windows to gawk at, but rather the mannequin modeling them. This is a very special mannequin who even has her own name, La Pascualita, which simply means Little Pascuala. When La Pascualita appeared in the bridal shop window on March 25th, 1930, rumors spread through the town like wildfire. This was no ordinary mannequin. La Pascualita was so lifelike, a delicate, distinctive face with soft features, a blushing bride, wide, glassy eyes, thick, luscious lashes, gentle, rosy lips, and hands complete with fingerprints and intricate fingernails. She was beautiful, yet haunting, and looked identical to the shop owner's deceased daughter. Legend has it that on the eve of her own wedding, Pascuala's daughter, whose name sadly has not survived as well as the mannequin's, was bit by a black widow spider and tragically passed away. Some accounts say it was a scorpion or more nefarious act that brought about her demise. But whatever the cause of death, her mother was determined that she would live on. You see, La Pascualita isn't a wax mannequin at all, but rather Pascuala's embalmed daughter, placed in the window modeling the newest, greatest bridal gowns, forever a blushing bride. Workers in the shop say that the mannequin's eyes follow you around the store, and when they come in the morning, she has moved positions in the window. Some workers say that they fear her so much that they break into fits of nerves and sweat by even being near her. Now, some of you might be thinking, hold up. It takes a dedicated team of scientists and embalmers to keep Lenin and Mao from disintegrating into decay. They are kept in special climate-controlled chambers, and still they have succumbed to bouts of rot, mold, and the effects of decomposition. How has La Pascualita survived standing in a window on display on the streets of Chihuahua for over 92 years showcasing the latest bridal wear? Well, spoiler alert, she probably isn't a corpse bride. But that doesn't mean she's not haunted. There is also another legend attached to our waxy wife-to-be. Apparently, upon laying his eyes on the stunning statue, a French magician became so obsessed with her that he would come to the shop at night, bring her to life, and take her out upon the town. Before the sun rose, he would return her to her glass display. Sometimes, she wouldn't quite be in the same position she was the night before, alerting the shopkeepers that all was not right with La Pascualita. Whether or not you believe in the legend, the idea of haunted objects is fascinating. Can an object even be haunted? If so, how? By who or what? And if I came in contact with one of these objects, what would that mean for me?
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to episode 36 of The West London Witch, a podcast where we share stories about those moments where we find ourselves very much not alone. Today's episode is all about haunted objects, the who, what, when, where, and why some objects seem to take on a life of their own. To help us navigate these murky waters is longtime friend of the show, Mike, from Paranormal Road Trippers. The Paranormal Road Trippers crew is a group of investigators who are dedicated to giving history a voice. They obtain evidence that connect history to paranormal claims and have a fantastic YouTube channel that chronicles all of their investigations and findings. Mike became particularly interested in haunted objects after a terrifying experience with a quintessentially creepy baby doll named Mandy. I'm Rebecca Strazina, and this is The West London Witch, episode 36, The Haunted Doll Collection.
So Mandy is a haunted doll from the late 1800s that lives in a museum in this in a city called Quesnel. The Quesnel Historic Museum is where this doll lives. There's so many stories about Mandy the doll, whereas she's heard to be walking around the museum at night. She's in a protective glass case. Think of Annabelle's protective case. Everyone's seen that movie. She's in a case very similar to that. They've come into the museum and the case has been open. Mandy the doll's been out. They've heard kids laughing. So there's so many stories around this doll.
When Mike says there are so many stories around this doll, that is actually a grave understatement. The internet is flooded with stories about Mandy. The only official source of information about the doll comes from the museum itself. According to the museum, Mandy was donated to their collection in 1991 by a woman who was given the doll by her grandmother. The woman, who was now a young mother to a baby girl herself, donated the doll because it, quote, gave her weird feelings. The doll had been kept in a trunk locked away, and since it was nearly 100 years old, was very delicate and fragile. No sooner had the doll been donated did the museum staff begin to experience strange, paranormal-like activity. Upon her donation, the museum needed to photograph and categorize Mandy for their collection. She was left overnight in a lab, and when the staff returned the next morning, the entire lab had been thrashed. The museum paired Mandy with a little white lamb who they have found outside her locked glass display case. Other sources claim that people can hear Mandy's footsteps pattering ominously behind them. Her eyes seem to follow you around the museum. Electronic equipment goes haywire in her presence, making her incredibly difficult to investigate. There are even claims that she has haunted people's nightmares.
So the story I'm about to tell you happened in 2015. I was on a fresh new team, and this is probably one of the first teams, I think we were the first teams that investigated this doll. So we were honing in on haunted objects. Can objects actually really be haunted? Me, I was very skeptical. I was very young and maybe a little cocky and arrogant, and I won't lie. And I'm like, whatever, this doll can't be haunted. Mind over matter. I won't let it harm me. I won't let anything happen. It's just a doll. Our one investigator, he was taking photos of it. He was looking at Mandy and whatnot. And then all of a sudden he tranced out. And we're like, hey man, wake up. Snapping around him, making snapping sounds. He was tranced out, locked eyes on the doll. He wouldn't talk to us. He was like a statue. You shake him, he's a statue, wouldn't move. And I'm like, oh boy, what's going on here? And then I'm like, come on, man, wake up. And then all of a sudden about probably 10 minutes later, he comes back, you'd say, and he was nauseous. He ran outside and he got sick all over the parking lot.
The investigator was in a fit of panic. He kept saying that he didn't know what had happened. He had no memory. and he was asking Mike and the team members to explain to him why he had fallen into such a stupor.
And we're like, we don't know what happened either. We've been trying to wake you up.
The investigator had zero memory of how he had fallen under Mandy's spell or what had transpired during his 10-minute transfixion.
I go look at the doll and I'm kind of assessing her, and nothing happened to me, but it kind of felt, that vibe in there was odd. When you're an investigator, you can kind of feel if there's going to be activity sometimes. So I'm like, all right, guys, before we investigate, I'm just going to go outside and have a drink and grab a snack really quickly. So business as usual, I go out to my truck, and I think it was peanuts to be exact. I was going to go reach for. And then from there, I blank out. And so the Quinnell Museum, well, pause there, I blank out. The Quinnell Museum is on Trans-Canada Highway 1. It's literally on the highway. And then all of a sudden, I wake up out of my trance and I'm about a foot away from walking onto the highway.
Mike came to when three of his fellow investigators had swarmed him and begged him to wake up. He has no memory of what possessed him to walk out to the freeway or how long he stood there. If it hadn't been for his teammates, who knows how this story would have ended.
So I can't explain what happened from when I went to go grab my snack to being woken up and shaken from the team members. Anyhow, I respect Mandy, and I visited Mandy last year and couldn't look her in the eyes. Even though she's a doll, couldn't look her in the eyes.
So how did Mandy become haunted? Well, we don't really know. There are, of course, theories, but to be upfront, they're just that, unsubstantiated theories. One is that a little girl was locked in the basement with her favorite doll, Mandy. The little girl was left to die alone in the basement, and her soul transferred into the doll. It's said that before Mandy was donated, when she was still locked in that trunk, the woman who owned her would hear a baby crying in the basement. She would go down to investigate, yet no one was there. Perhaps it was the soul of the child attached to her. Mandy is such a mystery that in 1999, even fraudster medium Sylvia Brown weighed in when Mandy made an appearance on the Montel Williams show. Brown said that Mandy had once belonged to twins who had died due to polio. Their mother would hold on to the doll while grieving, and her profound loss and grief was so great it had imprinted upon the doll. That's why people felt sadness when near her. It's a really compelling theory that actually could hold some water. But let's be clear. Sylvia Brown also said that kidnapping survivor Amanda Berry was dead when she was, in fact, very much alive in Ariel Castro's House of Horrors. In fact, when the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry did an investigation into Sylvia Brown, they discovered that out of her 115 predictions connected to crimes, 25 were flat out incorrect, and the remainder had zero conclusions or no connection to her claims. So the idea is great, but make of it what you will. But whatever is haunting Mandy seemed to ignite something inside of Mike. The paranormal road trippers actually specialize in haunted objects now. In fact, Mike even seeks them out.
So I've gone further and I've started researching haunted objects, be it a doll, be it a rock, be it anything that could be deemed haunted. I want to know why a haunted object is haunted, what makes it haunted, and what can it actually do to people.
One night, Mike was scrolling through Instagram when he sees a post stating that there is an auction for two reportedly haunted dolls.
The finder who had the dolls, one doll was said to change her mood, make her depressed, make her feel uneasy. It came from an antique hoarding situation, which is what they told me. That's all the information I have on that doll. And the other doll was made by her mom, which, could it be haunted? We don't know. and I bit on it. This lady was saying that they were haunted, and I bit, and I won, and that was what brought me to the research. How are these haunted? Why are they haunted? I got your story, so let's try and see if we can line it all up. Now, the first story I have of these dolls, I got them. I didn't open them. Didn't open them for. Got them in July. Didn't open them till September. Don't know why. Just put them under my computer desk and just forgot about them. Not forgot, avoided them. Don't know why, just did. The day I brought them home, I put them underneath my desk, and then I went on vacation. When I got home, those dolls were in the middle of my living room floor. The box that the dolls were in. Impossible, there's nobody here. I'm gone way up north.
As much as finding the box in the middle of the room freaked Mike out, he didn't want it to color his investigation. He didn't want to make him biased towards the results. See, Mike wants to certify these dolls as haunted or not. And he doesn't want to do it alone. He asked 5 other paranormal research groups not connected to him at all to investigate the dolls and log their results and findings.
My research is, are they placebo? Because when you see a haunted doll, you're like, haunted, has to be. Like a cool, creepy house, it's haunted. There's 17 ghosts in it because it's creepy looking. But is there even one ghost? We don't know. That's why we do this. So all I've been telling these teams that I've been sending the dolls to is, are they placebo or are they haunted? You tell me. I seal the box and make them sign a non-disclosure, and I give them research papers to log everything down so it's transparent.
The dolls are really creepy looking. They both have fabric bodies and legs. One looks like it's sleeping, while a mop of wispy brown hair crowns their tiny head, and a little white bonnet is tied under their chubby little chin. The other is a shiny resin head with blood red pointed lips, uneven eyes, and a sharp upturned nose. From some angles, it even looks like to me that it has teeth. That has been the main doll in question, and the results have been really interesting.
And the first person I sent them to, they said that her mood, it became depressed, became angry with just the dolls in the house. Felt uneasy, felt watched. And the research that came back was they deemed them haunted. There were voices on her audio recorders. There were trips on their ghost hunting devices like proximity sensors. And when I got the dolls back, it was more of a good riddance. You take them. Take them back. So to me, okay, 1 of 5 done.
The changes in mood was an interesting finding, as it substantiated the information that originally came with the dolls. Information that the investigators were not privy to. And it also began to validate Mike's feelings of uncertainty around the dolls.
Group 2, same thing. They, using the same sort of tools, got a lot of the same sort of responses. Apparently dolls are playful. I haven't investigated them. I'm avoiding investigating them because I wanted to be completely independent from me. And moods change, depression, anxiety. So then I want to know why this is happening. Are these dolls zapping people's energies? Then they go to the third people. Nothing. Placebo. Nothing. Not a spike in their gear, not a EVP on their voice recorders, just a couple creepy looking dolls. Fourth person, they had a couple hits. They didn't deem it paranormal because it wasn't, what is paranormal? Well, that's a whole different conversation on a different show. They didn't see any abnormalities when investigating them.
However, the fifth and final team did have evidence connected to the paranormal. They also felt a sense of unease, discomfort, and a terrible feeling of foreboding when around the dolls. During an EVP session, they asked the dolls if they would ever play dress up. And at the time, they didn't hear any response. But upon reviewing the session, they picked up a ghostly answer.
Would you ever play dress up?
A distinct no. Now, this is a strange response to me. What do you do with dolls if not dress them up? If there is a spirit connected to the dolls, surely it's not a child, for all children play dress up, especially with dolls. So that makes me wonder, what is connected to these baby dolls? Now, that's a harder question to answer. The paranormal road trippers are really good at connecting history to hauntings. But Mike doesn't have much of a history on these dolls. Three of the five groups claimed that they found evidence of the paranormal. But one group was emphatic that these were just creepy old dolls. Nothing to be seen here. No matter how you slice it at the end of the day, the science just isn't there to definitively say one way or another. We have to take what evidence and reports we have, no matter how concrete or circumstantial they may be, and draw our own conclusions. For Mike, at this time, he believes there is enough evidence to say that there is something going on here, at least with the older of the two dolls. But Mike is right. There are bigger questions at stake here. How and why do things become haunted? And why is it with dolls in particular that we are so morbidly fascinated by them? For me, I believe it's because dolls look like tiny humans, but they're devoid of emotion. It's horrifying to think that a tiny, inanimate version of you could come alive and have its own agenda. So, Mike, how do you think objects become haunted?
Trauma. Like, say, if I had a doll I was really attached to and I get hit by a bus and I have this doll with me. I'm just giving you an example of what I think could make it up. Maybe my spirit will go into the doll because I was very connected to it. I think a lot of personal objects hold sentiment and a value to someone. They hold memories. Like if you have a record player from the 50s that was used, it may used from then till now, that record player is going to have a lot of energy that's been put into a lot of people's first kiss, a lot of people having fights, a lot of people dancing, having fun, listening to songs that make them cry. So there's so much emotion in objects where I think they can be a beacon for things to haunt.
I like Mike's theory of love, energy, emotion, or trauma filling up an object, haunting it per se. Whenever I think of haunted dolls, I always think of evil spirits possessing them. Demons taking them over and using them as a conduit for no good, which of course may happen. But there is something so much more natural, human even, about Mike's theory.
I think people's energy imprints objects, like really old, like in England, for example, you have castles, people lived in there for hundreds of years, families, generations. So I feel a lot of people's energies get imprinted in, be it a building or an object. And I think that things can attach, like a spirit. I wouldn't go as far as demon. I've never experienced a demon or anything like that. I know that word gets thrown around a lot now. But it could just be energy attached. And that's what I'm trying to figure out. What could be attached to a doll?
If you'd like to keep up with Mike and the Paranormal Road Trippers investigations and findings, you can find them on all the socials and YouTube at The Paranormal Road Trippers. Before we leave, I'd like to share one more haunted doll story with you. There is nothing more exciting than the birth of a healthy baby. But the road to a successful pregnancy and subsequent birth can be difficult and fraught with tragedy. According to legend, a young, expectant mother received a gift from a jealous friend, a doll given out of spite and malice. When the baby was born, he was a healthy, vibrant, and strong little guy. Yet, 3 days after his birth, without any warning, he suddenly passed. The mother was, of course, devastated and inconsolable, but she was in no way prepared for what was about to come. Soon after the passing, she could hear her baby boy crying. Upon searching the home, she found that the cries were emanating from the baby doll, now named Joliet. As horrified as she was, she couldn't get rid of the doll. Her baby was trapped inside of it. Now, you may think that this is just the anguish of a grieving mother manifesting in a very distressing way. But after time, the woman later went on to have another baby, a girl this time. When the girl grew up and became pregnant, she was excited to welcome her very own baby boy into the world. Once again, a healthy baby boy entered the family. But on day 3, he passed, soon to be heard crying from the frozen, painted lips of Joliet. Sometimes he cried alone, sometimes with his uncle, together trapped in the wax and plastic body of Joliet. The girl went on to have another baby, a girl this time. And when she grew up and took on the ownership of Joliet, she too added a baby boy to its collection of lost infant souls. For 4 generations, this doll has been loved and cared for by the family, each daughter knowing she too will one day have a son join her brother, uncle, and great uncles inside the small childlike body of Joliet. We can't get rid of the doll. It has the spirits of their loved ones inside of it. But to keep it comes at such an unimaginable cost. Do you have a spooky story you'd like to share? I'd love to hear it. Drop me an email at thewestlondonwitch@gmail.com or find us on Instagram and Facebook at thewestlondonwitch. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. And come and follow us for additional content on Instagram and Facebook. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. The West London Witch is created by me, Rebecca Strazina. Our sound designer and production magician is the incredible Danny Cross. Our theme music was bespokely written and performed by the wickedly talented Kyle Hall. Our cover art is the beautiful collaboration between Lizzie Wilson and Jake Bowser. Special thanks to Miss Sinead Bowers, our quality control and biggest cheerleader. And thank you to you, all of our listeners all over the world. These are your stories. Thank you for sharing them with us.